This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Welcome to Dishy Mix. I'm your host, Susan Bratton, and on today's show, you're going to meet an old, but still young, friend of mine, Mark DeSwan Ahrens. Mark's the co-founder and chairman of a company based in New York, Amsterdam, Singapore, and I think London, called Effective Brands. They're a marketing consultancy that focuses on global brand marketing. And Mark and I met each other years ago, maybe 16 years ago now, when he was running something called the Interactive Brand Council, IBC, at Unilever. Unilever being one of the largest multi-global conglomerate brand companies in the world. Bigger often in its portfolio and its media buy than Procter & Gamble, that seems to get more press. And so Mark is a global citizen himself, and this was a natural place for him to start his own consultancy. He's written a new book, and we're going to talk about the global brand CEO, building the ultimate marketing machine. So let's welcome Mark on Dishy Mix today. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Susan. It's very exciting, and thank you very much for the invitation of being on your show.
Well, how the heck else am I going to catch up with you and find out what you've been up to? Isn't this so handy for me? I do a weekly show and I catch up with people that I adore like you.
Well, it's very, very mutual. And I think back with enormous warmth. In fact, our CEO was just saying recently to me, isn't it funny how with now we just launched a study on how to organize for social media. And it's sort of a byproduct of the learning project we do. And he looked at me and said, have you realized how you've come full circle? And it felt very true, but you were there right at the beginning teaching me things about the new interactive world.
Well, I'm ready for you to teach me some things. And I want to hear about how to organize for social media. Let's just start right there because I know you do. I think it's an annual global survey, so this must be a derivative of it or something. Talk about your brand survey work and then talk about this.
All right. Well, no, it's not an annual thing. It's an ongoing thing, and it's been going for 9 years now. And we call it the Leading Global Brand Study. It basically was built on a lack of knowledge, not just on our part, but fundamentally in the market. When we started Effective Brands, we were very enthusiastic about the concept of brands going global. We saw it happening all around us. But when we actually stepped back, both as practitioners, but also later as consultants, and said, so what hard evidence is there to help people find out what works and what doesn't work? There was literally nothing around. There was no book. Literally, when I was in my last global role, I looked for it, and it wasn't there. There wasn't a council to join, and as you know, at the start of new things, just like in the interactive space, there were a lot of councils that you could join, and you could discuss with peers what was working for you and what wasn't, and you could be honest about your difficulties and learn from each other. But there weren't any around specifically how to go global with brands, and there also weren't any consultancies. So we filled the void on the consultancy front, but very quickly realized that we needed to beef up our knowledge very fast. And we started the Leading Global Brands Project to do just that. And it started with a very simple value exchange, reaching out to old colleagues and people we knew in the global marketing space, saying, will you give us, in confidence, 2 hours of your time, and we will ask you about all the things that maybe you wouldn't feel comfortable seeing on a conference platform, but that you could be honest to us about, because what you'll get back after 20 or 30 interviews, we'll come back to you and tell you what, speaking to all your peers, floats to the top. What seems to be working? What are the things that people wish they'd done on day one of their job? What do the people think that they should never have done? What are the consultancies to avoid and which ones really help you? And the sort of key questions when you're new into a global role that really make a difference. And that was the foundation of the Leading Global Brands Project. And I guess we knew we were onto something when within the first year we had people calling us saying, hey, I hear about this project. I'm the head of Heineken Global. Can I participate? So what started off with maybe 10 people in 3 months snowballed into something that was over 25 big global brands in the first year. And now, 9 years later, there's over 250 global brands that have participated. And we added a quant component, a real survey that's standardized and that we use in every project that we basically work on. And we now have over 21,000 global marketers and their colleagues that have responded to some standard questions around what does it take to win in global marketing? And that's the ongoing study. Every project we start contributes again into that study. But from time to time, we find subtracts that are of specific interest to people. And one last year was about going into the Chinese market. And you may well know that we launched our book in Shanghai and we had a dedicated summit where we brought a lot of global marketing leaders that were responsible for taking their brands into China together. This year's theme is very much not about what to do in social media. There's enough people looking at that, but how to organize for it. Who does what within an organization when the whole organization becomes transparent, not just at a local level, but across regions and globally?
So in the global brand study, which is a really impressive thing, and I'm glad that it was a juggernaut that took off for you, good ideas have a tendency to do that. How many of these organizing principles that are in the book came out of it? Because some of the things that I wanted to talk to you about were the five drivers of global marketing effectiveness, the brand ID framework, the brand positioning alignment framework, and the servant leadership mindset. Those were four things that kind of bubbled to the top for me. Were any of those things that you constructed from the feedback you got in the study?
Absolutely. All of them were.
All of them. Okay.
Let's be very
frank.
That's
all entirely new information that you created, the crowdsourced wisdom of global marketers.
That's a nice way to describe it, Susan.
Yeah, I think you should definitely write that down, you know?
Yes.
That's a good sales pitch.
I like that. No, it's absolutely true. I mean, obviously, one of the things you mentioned is a positioning framework. What we like to say very often is that basically if you're a marketer and you've been promoted into a global marketing role, whether it's a regional role where you have suddenly 12 countries that you're responsible for, or a global role where really you're in charge of the health and the growth of that brand across the globe, basically you got that role because you were good at marketing. You went to undoubtedly a good business school and your first role was an assistant on some brand in some great marketing company, and you worked your way up the ladder, and one day you become head of a region or head of global. You don't get that role if you're not very good at what we would call the what of marketing. The what is: what is the vision for the brand? What is the positioning of it? How is it competitively advantaged versus others? What is the innovation work behind it? In other words, in products and solutions and services that we need to offer to deliver the brand promise. What is the communication strategy behind it? For all of these, there is a litany of consultancies and support, but also in-company expertise available. This is what marketing has been for many, many years. Our insight was, at the beginning of Effective Brands, that these marketing leaders are therefore actually not that worried about that part of the job. What's new to the role is that suddenly you have the responsibility for trying to align, let's say, between 12 and 102 countries behind one strategy. In fact, you want to develop a strategy that actually encompasses their key challenges and opportunity and delivers against their market needs. You want to develop innovation, which then gets adopted, and not in an old situation where local marketeers sit back and say, well, let's see what they develop, and maybe I'll buy it, or maybe I won't. But that they actually say, no, the global team is working on what makes me successful next year. And so it's not the what of global marketing roles that challenges these new leaders. It's the how do I do that in the context of highly matrixed, complex global marketing organizations. And that's the part we help with. So some of the concepts you mentioned earlier are very specific around how do you do that well? How do you drive a strategy once it's been developed into a company in such a way that people that really matter, the key local marketing directors, the key chairman, that they adopt it, see it as their own, and most importantly, then make it successful locally? Because you can't push it down their throats. You need them to take a global strategy and apply it locally in a way that makes sense.
So eloquent. I love that. I feel like I should stand up and go, yes, 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 now. Yeah. So that question that came to my mind that I wanted to get a level set on, when did you start Effective Brands? Like 10 years ago, right? 2000?
You know, Susan, it's so nice you asked that. Last week, it was
10
years.
Yay! All right, there you go. So 10 years ago.
Very, very recently. And we're now, we have a huge program within the company where we're going to celebrate that. And it's actually something I'm very proud of because we've grown so much over the last 2 years. Our average growth rate over the years has always been between 20 and 30, 35%. But last year, it was 2009 was horrible. We grew, but it was horrible.
Yeah.
But last year, we grew by more than half. And one of the things that you will have picked up from the book is that we really believe that organizations where everyone in the company feels the purpose of the company is inspired personally by the purpose of the company, not by growth and not by profit or by revenues, but just by what is it we're doing? How do we make a difference in the world? That's the kind of stuff that gets you 20, 30, 40% more payback out of people just because they want to do the work. And as we stepped back as a board last year, we took a hard look at ourselves and said, can we honestly say that after a year of, you know, 40% plus growth, that that everybody in the company completely is centered around and inspired by what it is we do as a company? And we said, no, of course not. There were so many people that have come on board. We've been so busy trying to keep quality up and building our network. This is something that we need to step back and focus on. So we have created a session in the end of March. It's going to be the last 3 days of March, actually, where we're going to bring for the first time everyone in the company. Now, we're small. We're 60 people, but they're all over the world. We have those four offices that you mentioned, but then we also have people on the ground in Tokyo and in Paris, and we're bringing everybody together for 3 days in Rio de Janeiro to focus around our purpose of Effective Brands, which is about unleashing global marketing potential. And if you'd like, I can tell you a little bit about how we're doing that, but that might not be on your topic.
Well, there's so many other things that I want to talk about that I'll save that for if we have time, and thank you. And it begged the question for me, 10 years into this, and 6 years that I've known you before that, you've been in marketing for 20-odd years now, in working for global brands and with global brands, how much of the, you know, 600 million people on Facebook now, you know, so many people all over the world are online. How much has the internet and internet access, global internet access, homogenized what we need to do with regard to global marketing? When you used to think about global marketing 20 years ago, you thought about localization. You thought about taking that product, moving it into global markets, and localizing it for that market need. But I wonder now, because a lot of what you said the Effective Brands focus is for your customers is actually about what I would almost call like change management. A lot of change management is alignment of systems, people, and infrastructure around an overarching or thematic strategy. And it seems like that's what you're doing. So is localization diminishing and, you know, alignment increasing from a consumer perspective and from the job that needs to be done and how much, if you could ever quantify it?
Well, I think it's very insightful, Susan. When somebody faces a gun to me and says, what exactly do you do? I always say, well, I guess it's about 50% marketing consultancy and 50% change management. Because what you've pointed out is a very hard fact that a lot of companies are struggling to deal with, is just that the outside world has globalized so much faster than the organizations that are supposedly servicing that world. So I would never be the one to argue that there is now one global consumer profile being developed where people are becoming so alike that basically you can pretend as though they all live in the same country. That's not the case. At the same time, every one of our clients, and you know, we're talking about big companies, are seeing that key segments like youth show such consistency across geographies. I mean, we mentioned in the book that, you know, somebody that's a youth in Shanghai actually has more in common in terms of preferences, habits, and interests and attitudes to youth in New York, Paris, and Milan than they do to their own family members who live two hours south of Shanghai. So it is true that the outside world and the internet has played a humongous role in that. Also satellite TV and such like. But nevertheless, I think the internet has been the big democratizer of knowledge and learning to consumers. Organizations have not kept up anywhere near the same speed. An example that I like to quote is Starbucks, that at the time, many years ago, when we were working with them, the Chinese team of Starbucks was extremely proud because they'd been invited to open a coffee shop within the Forbidden City. Now, this, if you know anything about China, is not something that you decide on your own. You get invited to open a coffee shop in the Forbidden City. But the Chinese are very commercial, and there's a lot of tourists there, and they must have figured out that it made sense to have a Starbucks there. And so the Chinese team of Starbucks was tremendously proud of this. However, this news came out, and about 2 days later, both in England, particularly actually in England, but also in the US, the global Starbucks teams and the local Starbucks teams there that had absolutely nothing to do with this, and in fact hadn't even heard about this yet, were being blasted by the press for being culturally insensitive. Here, yet again, was an example of an American company, you know, bulldozing its way into a cultural heritage site of one of our allies and respected blah, blah, blah. And it just showed again how insensitive. And the truth was, hey, guys, we were invited in. But the local Starbucks marketeers in England and the global Starbucks marketeers in Seattle weren't even ready for this news yet. The internet had spread it so quickly. So the big point of consumer transparency is something that every organization has to face up to. Whether you like it or not, and whether you have the responsibility internally or not, whatever happens anywhere in the world, you're going to hear about it. And guess what? If it's wrong, you're responsible for it. So there's a lot of organizations that are trying to catch up and are trying to indeed develop processes and organizations to live up to a reality that's already happening outside.
So I want to move into some of these, and thank you for that. I want to move into some of these constructs that are in the Global Brand CEO book that you wrote. It's a hell of a book. I mean, in a lot of ways, I kind of felt like in all the best terms of this word and none of the bad ones, it was really a textbook, like an operating guide, a manual for a global brand manager. The case studies, the constructs, the examples of global CEOs and their stories, you know, just felt like it had a real, it was like the opposite of a book that you would just consume that was like a fad. It was the kind of book that would be a reference book, not only pinpointing a moment in time, but giving you some really fundamental knowledge that you probably didn't learn anywhere before. So one of the things that you talk about, and I want to start with this, is this notion of servant leadership mindset. There are actually two mindsets that you say are fundamental to a well-run global marketing organization, the servant leadership mindset and the looking for similarities mindset. Can you share a little bit about those, but also do them at a fairly high level in that there are quite a few other things I want to talk to you about.
Gotcha.
and people will only give us like a half hour of their day, and they're happy to go buy a book. So just give us a high level on it.
I will, Susan. And indeed, the brief for the book was to be a manual for people in the job. I have a personal fad. I go onto LinkedIn and I look at how many people have the title global marketing in their role, and it's exploding. Now, this is not scientific because, you know, LinkedIn, I'm sure its total membership is exploding too. But the number of people that I find online that have global marketing in their title description is now over 600,000. So we know who we're writing this to. It's all those people that are saying, how do I do this? That's exactly what we set out to do. Now, the two terms, and I'm not at all surprised that you picked up on them, and I'm sure most of your listeners, knowing you, Susan, will not be surprised, because the servant mindset is one that is really stolen with great pride from the 1970s, from a philosopher that from a leadership perspective launched the term. And it's about recognizing that the most effective leadership is the type of leadership where the people that you lead actually believe you're doing it for them. and they really understand that somebody needs to step back and do the things that they don't have the time to do, or they don't have the resources to do, or they don't even have the expertise to do, but they are the non-urgent but very, very important things that will determine our success not today but tomorrow. And that is what we believe is the mindset that the best global marketing leaders should take, the servant leadership mindset. There's two constituents. It means that if I'm the head of, let's say, Dove Worldwide, I need to understand precisely what my key 5 or 10 markets, Germany, America, China, obviously, what those markets are going through, what their reality is, what their competitive war is, and that I'm working on things that will help them get better next year. I shouldn't be meddling in how they're fighting their tactical battles on a day-to-day basis, but I should be thinking about the big things, big innovations, big communication programs that they can implement next year to beat the competition. And those people really have to know in those countries that that's what I've made my agenda. That creates respect. That's the servancy. However, there's a leadership component to it because, quite frankly, and this is a personal philosophy, I believe that everybody in the world has the right to a boss. When somebody says to you, okay, I heard what you said, but it's going to be left, not right, that takes a burden off your shoulder. And if there is 52 marketing directors, because there's 52 countries, they all full well understand that there's a time for them to make their case of what they really need. But they also understand that the organization isn't going to do 52 different things, and that it makes an awful lot of sense for somebody at one point to say, I heard your case, I've weighed the pros and the cons, and now it's this direction that we're going. This is the vision, and take it or leave it. And that means that if you work for Tide detergents in Argentina and you don't like the color orange, well, there isn't a phone number in Cincinnati that you can call. They just don't care what you think about the color of the packaging. And if you work for Apple and you think that the iPad should have been launched differently, I think you can always move to the East Coast, but there probably isn't anybody on the West Coast that's willing to listen to you because there's somebody that's made that decision. And it's that balance between real servancy and having the key players in key markets know that you're working to make them successful rather than your ego or, you know, your CMO profile. Who cares? There is no global market. If those 5 markets don't win, you don't win. And at the same time, having then the maturity and having earned the respect to be able to step back and say, okay, guys, we can't have 5 strategies. We're going to have 1. It's this one. And everybody leans back and goes, okay, let's just do it.
Yeah, you've paved the way to get the buy-in. That's very, very important.
Now, what that does require, and you raise that in your question, is that within the company, there needs to be a sense of a culture, I would say almost, of looking for similarities. And this is not something that the marketing leader needs to take responsibility for. Because as the world is globalizing, and I don't think we need to spend much time on that, big organizations are making the analysis and coming up every time again with the conclusion, if we don't leverage our global expertise, if we don't leverage our global skill, we're going to be beaten. We're not going to be here in 5 years. So what we need to do is we need to have a mindset that says, what can we use from other places that we can roll out here quickly so we don't have to reinvent the wheel? Now, quite naturally, people are actually programmed differently. We are all programmed. If I show you a picture of a funny airplane, we do this at innovation programs sometimes, Susan, and the wings face the other way and the cockpit is supposedly in the wrong place, and I ask 50 people to make some comments, 80% of those comments will be negative. It's the way we work. We look for what's wrong. We look for what won't work. And that's not the way you build effective global marketing organizations. So a global marketer will only be effective if the CEO and the COO and the CFO and the head of HR are all singing in tune and saying, we need to be more global or we will die. And there are PDP, you know, personal development aspects. There's a cultural thing about thinking global or acting global or promoting global. If that's not in the culture and people are still being promoted or respected for actually picking apart a global strategy and saying, that won't work here, then you might as well give up. because then the groundwork for being effective at a global level isn't there. So a global marketeer needs to show servant leadership mindset, but he needs to be able to build on a culture that says, hey, we're going global and we're looking for similarities to make that happen.
You know, a lot of people who are listening to you talk right this very second are thinking to themselves, well, I'm not the global marketer. I'm the only marketer. Like, I run marketing for my company. and they might not even have global in their title because they just assume I'm global. You know, everything I do, I run a company that is a global company because what we sell, you know, is sold all over the world. So global almost becomes not even something you'd think about because you just it's like assumptive in what you do. You sell your product and you're responsible for sales and marketing all over the world. For a person who comes from a small and medium business, not a business where there are multinational headquarters in different organizations, but where there's a single HQ in the US, but they sell to companies all over the world. What kind of advice would you give that marketer about how they could be more successful with international sales? What are some of the things that you can affect as the VP of marketing or the CMO or whatever it might be in a small to medium business now, today? What are the two things you'd tell that marketer to do to increase sales at a global level?
Well, Susan, I think you make a good point. And there really is two dimensions that we look at. Ultimately, what characterizes a global marketing organization is that it's complex. But there are lots of organizations that are actually completely national and that are very, very complex. If you think about an insurance a company that has life insurance and home insurance and car insurance, those divisions are typically run as completely separate business units with different marketeers and different salespeople that are operating under the same brand. And what you'll typically find in those organizations is that there is actually someone somewhere that is responsible for building that brand and for growing the business and supporting each of those business units with brand materials and brand vision and working with them to see how the brand can actually generate growth. I think that's everything that we say in our book is very, very relevant for those people too. At the same time, we've talked to organizations where they have regional sales offices, and actually there are people on the ground representing the brand in different regions and thinking through how do we make this and this beer relevant to New Orleans rather than to New York. Very, very different cities. And so the principles very much translate to similar situations. And those principles keep coming down to really connecting with the key players that are across the markets, whether they're regional or business units, and understanding what role the brand really plays in that marketplace. And then looking for the pieces where you say, well, we could create something bigger than the local person could just do or the regional person could just do. You know, we worked with Smirnoff in the past, and they decided to make a music program. And just because they were bringing different markets together within the U.S., they were able to assemble budgets that were bigger, and therefore they were able to get bands that had national fame rather than some local jazz bands. And so it's about basically getting an organization, no matter how big, to understand that there is always the short-term battle that will drive success today, but then there are bigger things that if we group together and cluster our strength and expertise and budget, that we could probably do that otherwise our competitors couldn't do, and they will drive competitive advantage next year or next month. And so I think marketing leaders, no matter how large the organization, if they take the step back and say, how clear are the market circumstances to everybody? How inspired are the people within the organization about what it is we're trying to do as a company, as a brand? How clear are we on the key three objectives for the business for the year ahead? How well is it known exactly who does what? Because that so often turns out to be a roadblock for action. You're just not sure that you're allowed to do that, or there might be somebody else that wants to sort of mingle in that planning process or in the execution. And finally, what tools are there to help make me successful? Surely somebody's done this before. Am I having to reinvent the wheel here? Or is there somebody that says, oh, in New Orleans, you want to do a series of jazz concerts? Well, we did it in three other cities last year. Here's a checklist of how to organize a program like that. That's nothing to do with global or local. That's about leveraging best practices
so does,
and making them available
to people those great
in markets everywhere.
They work with you?
Well, actually, what we created the book for was just that. We really did want to have a marketer that is confident about their marketing mix, about their marketing experience, about their marketing leadership skills, to have a guidebook to say, okay, but I'm in a new role. There's lots of people looking at me, expecting me to say brilliant things and help solve everything in a totally unrealistic time span. How do I go about this? How do I even, before I accept the job, you may have noticed the last chapter, is all about preparing for the role and then the first 100 days into the role.
Yeah, that's
how
brilliant.
Do I set my... Yeah, well, you know, it's just so much of this is about managing expectations. So how do I set up the role? How do I make sure that there's clarity around what I'm going to do so people don't have pie sky expectations and that I can never deliver against? And how do I know that I can hold people accountable and say, hang on, when I took this role, we agreed that this is what I was going to be able to decide. So what are you doing in the room?
So I noticed that you reference a number of things in the book, like on the inside front cover, you talk about things like your survey, leading global brands, pulse check, brand sessions, share of experience, purposeful positioning, the brand ID, the global brand CEO, the EB, effective brands progression map, the effective brands role matrix, the effective global marketing roadmap. Are these all best practices? Pieces of information that a marketer working with you has access to that help them figure all of this out? Is that what those are?
That's right. And at the same time, I want to be extremely realistic. For example, how you do positioning, there are probably 50 models in the world on how to do that. We have a very strong belief that purposeful positioning, in other words, a brand that is built on something that is a belief, is a purpose that's bigger than making just money, will be a significant competitive advantage. And this is a model to help do that. The brand progression map is really a way for big, complex organizations to cluster the different markets and to say, okay, we're trying to do different things in different markets, but surely across all of those, there's probably five clusters that we can organize markets around so that we can think about those clusters and say what will be right for those clusters of markets rather than having to develop 82 plans. So these are frameworks, they're planning tools, they're concepts that really help marketers do their work faster. I would be the last in the world to say that these are the ones you must go with because otherwise you will fail. Some of them are very, very unique to global marketing, and we truly believe that they will speed up your process by months, if not years. Others are the way we believe it works best, but I would never fight against another consultancy and say, oh, theirs doesn't work. Very often, what you find across complex organizations is that it isn't so much the framework that matters. It's the getting everybody in the organization that matters to line up behind one
alignment,
and make some decisions.
Yeah, exactly. Alignment. That's really what I got out of this whole conversation is that what you do is help people align around a strategy and that it could be any number of strategies. So last question, and this is specifically about your book. Your book was published in Holland. I noticed that you self-published because I saw that the imprimatur was Airstream, and I know
yes.
you have an Airstream
exactly.
RD. You decided to self-publish, and I noticed that it's a very beautifully produced book. The paper stock is nice. The illustrations are very sophisticated. You put an enormous amount of your knowledge and energy in this book. As I said, it's really a textbook for global alignment. Why did you self-publish? Why didn't you try to get, you know, Malcolm Gladwell's publisher to publish your book or whatever? Why did you do it yourself? And are you glad you did? And how did that go?
It's very interesting that you raise it. The answer is yes, yes, and yes. We're
That's
very
the answer
glad.
I always like. Yes, yes, yes.
You know, I did my homework. As I was interviewing key stakeholders and leaders for the book, some of them had written their own books, and I would always spend half the conversation, particularly at the beginning, and say, so, you know, what are the advantages and disadvantages of publishing with a house? And in the end, it came down to, do you want to be in a Barnes & Noble on the table as people walk in or not? Because the only way you're ever going to get there is if you have a big publisher behind you. The answer, of course, for us is not. Our target is those 600,000 people in the world that have global marketing in their title. And those people, they hear about books at conferences, they read about them online, and they buy them on Amazon. So that distribution matter was settled very, very quickly. The next question became, well, but what about the promoting and making sure that people hear about the book? And I spoke to other writers that had significant experience with other publishing houses. And remember, we're all in the marketing space. And the term I kept hearing is, actually, I'm doing the marketing. Actually, they gave me a marketing plan. It was so bad, I rewrote it. Publishing houses are known for marketing strategies. And it's so true. So there was really that part of it which said, all we're going to do is we're going to bring in people that don't understand the space in terms of global marketing, and they're going to try and affect. In fact, one of the publishers I talked to had his title changed dramatically at the 11th hour into something which really didn't resemble the contents of the book, because the publishers thought that that would be sexier in the market. Stories like that really scared me off, and quite frankly, I didn't have the time and the energy to have yet another key stakeholder to deal with. Thinking then about the actual production closed the deal, because I've seen a lot of books, and I, you know, as I was preparing with my partner, by the way, you haven't mentioned that yet, and I want to mention it. This was very much a co-production with the other founder of Effective Brands, Frank van den Driest. He and I always said, we want this to be a piece of work where when you feel it, when you touch it, it's actually going to feel old school, in the sense that it makes you feel comfortable and it makes you want to feel to use it. And we looked around and looked at some books that we really liked, and very quickly had about three in terms of size and look and feel. And the funny thing is that that little country, Holland, is known worldwide for graphic design and for printing quality. I actually took a copy of this book. We launched it in Shanghai. I think I mentioned it to you. And the first print run was very expensive to do. So I had lots of copies with me in Shanghai. And I had a meeting with a big printer in Shanghai, thinking that he was going to tell me he could print it for a fraction of the cost. And he opened the book, and he was holding it, and he was feeling it. And he said, we call this Dutch press. I said, what are you talking about? He said, the way this is finished, this is called Dutch press in the business. Nowhere else in the world can they do it this quality. And he came up with a quote which was about 20% cheaper. And then when I did the math with the taxes and the shipping and all the worries about getting it from China into the rest of the world, I thought, you know what? We had a beautiful Dutch designer work on this. She did a fantastic job. She's going to be warm and glowy when she hears your review. And we had great printers that work with us at every stage. And even when we found the last minute little corrections that needed to be made, they were flexible enough to do it for us. And they produced a kick-ass book. I'm so proud of this book as it sits now. And I wouldn't change anything for the world.
I love hearing that. And I agree with you that it's an absolutely beautiful book. And I would like to give one personally autographed copy away to one of our Dishy Mix listeners who've listened to this show. Would you be willing to do that?
Well, of course.
Okay, so if you haven't been listening to Dishy Mix yet, you've got hundreds of episodes to catch up on. What you do to get this copy of this beautiful book, The Global Brand CEO, Building the Ultimate Marketing Machine, by Mark de Swan Arens and Frank van den Driest, is go to the Dishy Mix Facebook page and post on the wall that you'd like to be the winner and why. And I will pick my favorite request, and Mark will sign it, and he'll mail it to you. And you'll get to touch and feel the beautiful Dutch press with all this great global information. Does that sound good, Mark?
Absolutely. And I was just going to say that if your listeners want to know a little bit more about the book, if they go to www.effectivebrands.com, there's a book description right off the homepage. And that gives them a little bit of an insight of whether this is something that would be interesting for them or not. And it's available on Amazon.com, of course.
Perfect. Well, listen, I have really enjoyed, we've barely scratched the surface. There is so much depth of information in the book and in your mind that 30 or 40 minutes doesn't do it justice, which is exactly how it should be, right?
Right, I guess
just
so.
You and I are just the a little amuse-bouche for the global brand marketer today. We just gave him a little taste, and there's plenty more where that came from. I really appreciate you coming on the show today. It's always a delight just to hear your voice. I miss you. It's been great to have this small amount of time just to hear the amazing work that you've been getting done in the world, Mark. Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Well, thank you very much. It was a great pleasure and a great honor to be on your show, Susan. And I look forward to meeting you in person, hopefully sometime in the near future.
Well, seeing me again. We've met before, but yes.
Yes, absolutely. No, I mean re-seeing you.
Re-seeing me. Re-seeing, touching me, giving
years.
Me a big
exactly.
hug.
Exactly. It's been too many years.
So you have just gotten to know Mark DeSwan Ahrens. Mark is the co-founder of Effective Brands. You can find it at effectivebrands.com, of course. And I hope you'll post on the wall at Dishy Mix. Just search for Dishy Mix on Facebook and you'll find me. And I'm your host, Susan Bratton. Thank you for tuning in today. I hope it was a pleasure for you. It sure was for us. Have a great day, and I hope I'll connect with you next week. Take care.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.